Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
When you're looking to try out a new restaurant, there are a ton of different ways to kind of define what makes a good place, right? Gatz is going to tell you how good the food is. Yelp or Urban Spoon might tell you how much it costs, how good the service is. And then you've got the health department. They give everybody a grade based on cleanliness. Here in New York, you're also going to find calorie counts as well, so you know if this food is going to make you fat. The newest restaurant guide, though, doesn't cover any of those issues. It's going to tell you about the working conditions for the dishwashers, the cooks, and the waitresses in the restaurant. Joining us now from Washington, D.C. is Saru Jayaraman of the Restaurant Opportunities Center United, or ROCU, and the new National Diner's Guide, which is part of your organization's mission. Why do we need this guide, Saru?
Thanks for having me. So we have over 10 million restaurant workers in the United States. It's actually one of the largest and fastest growing segments of the U.S. economy right now, even during the current economic crisis. Unfortunately, with a minimum wage at the federal level of $2.13 for tipped workers, we have a median wage in this industry of just under $9, which means that the vast majority of restaurant workers earn poverty wages, and they have little or no access to benefits. In our research, we've surveyed over 4,000 workers, and we find that 90% don't have access to paid sick days, and that two-thirds report cooking, preparing, and serving food while sick. And while there are some livable wage jobs in our industry, our research shows that there's very little room for upward mobility, meaning that a lot of these workers who are in poverty wage jobs are concentrated and unable to move up the ladder. So the thing is that there are a lot of restaurants, several that we've worked with over the last 10 years, who do believe that providing livable wages, benefits, and equal opportunities for advancement is actually good for business. It's good for them as employers, it's good for workers, and it's good for consumers. And so we wanted to put together a guide that both highlighted those restaurants that were doing it right, providing livable wages and sustainable working conditions, and we also wanted to provide information to consumers about the 150 most popular restaurants in America. What are they doing with regard to minimum wages for tipped workers and non-tipped workers? Do they provide paid sick days, which is really important to consumers because I'm sure most of us don't want a server or a cook who's working while sick? And do they provide opportunities for advancement? Because we have found that when workers are able to move up the ladder, they actually provide better food and better service because they're able to stay in one place for a longer period of time.
And that's kind of an issue. I mean, it's hard not just for employees at food service industries, but, you know, I worked my way through college working at restaurants. It's difficult for the management as well, Saru. I mean, you have a very high turnover in some of these jobs. In some cases, these are the kind of jobs that people will simply not show up. They'll take another job and never quit that original job. You have a kind of a rotating cast of characters in terms of your employees. It's difficult to kind of have the same kind of practices in a restaurant, isn't it, as you would have, say, in an office job where people stay for years?
Absolutely. This industry actually faces one of the highest turnover rates of any industry. It's more than 200%. But the thing is that even Cornell University School of Hospitality Management has written reports that show that better wages and better working conditions result in workers being able to stay longer. Turnover costs the industry. It costs employers. It ultimately costs consumers. And workers would benefit from being able to stay as well. So our research shows that improving these practices across the board would reduce turnover, increase worker productivity, and help everybody.
All right. That's Saru Jayaraman of the Restaurant Opportunities Center United. And also with us is Dave Ritigliano, chef and owner of the Southport Brewing Company in Connecticut. You know, Dave, restaurant work is really difficult work. I'm sure you can say that. I can say that from personal experience. Does a guide like this help managers, or does it make it more difficult?
Anything that restricts our ability to operate our restaurant and employ people is not a good thing. The reason the turnover rate's so high in the restaurant business is that people use us for a short period of time, gain some skills, and move on to their chosen profession. Also, the failure rate amongst our industry is about 90% in the first year.
Nine out of 10 restaurants go out of business in their first year after opening.
Actually, first 5 years. I misspoke.
Okay. And that's because it's just a volatile industry. It's hard to get enough business in to cover your costs.
Well, yeah, it's hard enough to get a business to cover your costs, but it's not just a business that you're dealing with, a creative factor here. People are producing food that other people want to come in and buy. If you're not good at it, there's still an artistic area to our industry.
Okay.
You're dealing with flavors and palates and things like that.
Well, I mean, obviously, of course. But, you know, let's talk about, when you say something like the minimum wage for a waitress or waiter is $2.13 an hour, and most people are shocked by that. But that's because the American restaurant business is based on tips.
Right. You can only give somebody a less than the standard minimum wage as long as the tips they receive make their wage at least the minimum wage in the state that they're in, the full minimum wage.
All right, that's Dave Vertigliano, chef and over the Southport Brewing Company in Connecticut. Saru, let me go back to you. If you're worried about the pay that waiters receive, maybe this should be something that goes to Congress. Maybe it should simply, we should change the structure so that waiters and waitresses aren't dependent on tips anymore.
Absolutely. I want to say that our data shows that it's actually not mostly young people who move on to their chosen profession. These are mostly data shows, BLS data shows. This is mostly working adults who support families on these incomes. So, yes, absolutely, Congress does need to do something about it. But it is we have an incredible power as consumers who eat out daily to both inform the industry, which actually puts a lot of influence onto Congress. So it's the National Restaurant Association that has been responsible for arguing that the tip minimum wage should be so low. So absolutely it's important for us to let Congress know these things need to change. But as consumers, we can also let the industry know that this is not acceptable. That, in fact, our data shows that tips do not most of the time make up the difference between the lower tip minimum wage and the regular tip minimum wage. And that lower tip minimum wage actually drags the median wage for all workers down to below the poverty level.
Well, let me go back to Dave Vertigliano here really quickly. I mean, having worked.
What you said was just not true. It's a statute. If they don't make at least the minimum wage, we have to pay them the minimum wage. That's just the way the law is written.
You mean if somebody's declared tips that they're declaring for their taxes, for example, don't bring them up to minimum wage, the business has to make up the difference.
Absolutely. Our servers in our area, they average between $20 and $25 an hour when you add in their tips. That's just reported.
So Saru Jayaraman of the Restaurant Opportunity Center United, you know, let me ask you, do you think that diners really care? I mean, is this kind of thing actually going to affect someone's decision on where to go to eat, to worry about the benefits of the waiter or the chefs?
Absolutely. We've had consumers ask us for the last 10 years, where should we eat, where can we go that we know that workers are paid well and treated well? How can we know information about where we eat out? The day we released our diner's guide, we had 4,000 hits on our website. It went up about 4,000%. And consumers absolutely do care because you don't want a worker who's sick serving you or preparing your food with a very incredibly low median wage. Workers can't afford to take a day off if they don't have a paid sick day. And many of our members across the country, I can tell you story after story, are homeless because they can't afford to pay rent. They go in and out. They're teetering on the brink of not being able to pay their rent or afford a phone, which they need for employment. We're talking about across the board, a poverty wage industry, and that's including tips. The median wage nationally is less than $9, including tips.
Dave, let me give you the last word quickly to you. The restaurant, it sounds like you're saying the restaurant business is hard enough.
We try to do the right thing by our employees. We appreciate them. We can't live without them. Whoever this person is has a farcical idea of how the restaurant industry works and a union agenda. And really, that's all there is. There's really nothing else to say.
That's Dave Vertigliano, chef and owner of the Southport Brewing Company in Connecticut, and Saru Jayaraman, co-founder, director of the Restaurant Opportunity Center United, a nonprofit based in Washington, D.C. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
So earlier in the program, we talked about a whole lot of things, and you can join those conversations at thetakeaway.org. Adam wrote on our Facebook page that he sees voter suppression as a conspiracy, referring to a claim by the NAACP. What do you see of voter disenfranchisement heading into the presidential campaign? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.